on, everyone? It's your guy, Cole Jackson, back with another episode of the What the Flock postgame show. We got to stop meeting like this, folks. I mean, the third primetime game where I'm coming to you, literally just had my shirt off once again, trying to get it together. But we're here, and we're going to recap the thrilling 31-25 overtime win by the Baltimore Ravens over the Indianapolis Colts. If you're enjoying these breakdowns, if you love the instant analysis, hit the like button, hit subscribe so you can find your way back for more. Before we get into it, I'd like to thank the sponsors of the What the Flock postgame show. It's our guys and gals over at Lean's Pint and Shell, located right in the heart of Baltimore. I say this every week. They're always partying because it's always an insane finish to the Ravens game. They're there right now. They're enjoying the game day specials. They got 32-ounce Bud Light drafts on. They got Michelob Ultra Buckets, Modelo and Corona Ponies, and White Claw Buckets. There's something for everyone out there. Go check them out. They're the go-to for Ravens game day. And now, my co-host, my friend, my cardiac arrest partner, it is Adam Bonacorsi. What the flock is going on, man?
Man, I got to tell you. So we really need to, honestly, we need to lead in with this, Cole. The time disparity between your feed and my feed, because I think that that really makes it just even more nerve-wracking for the two of us when we jump in here and we're waiting for the game to end and there's a delay, right? What do you say, about 3 seconds or so?
Longer, man. It's like 10 seconds. So everyone knows I'm about 10 seconds behind, apparently, Canadian cable. And I was watching this on cable. I'm not streaming this. Canadian cable is about 10 seconds behind what's going on down south of the border. So Adam's reacting to the play that I haven't seen yet. And then Adam started faking me out and doing like false reactions. So he'd go like, no. But then it was a completion. So he tortured me a little bit today. But you know, worth it. Just dudes being guys being dudes. You love to see it. We have a lot to talk about. We have good, we have bad. We're going to start, I think, with, what in the world is this team doing in the first three quarters of every game this year? Like I don't get it. I don't like Adam and I were just talking about this off stream. Getting Lamar Jackson going early in games is so important. And this isn't just a Lamar Jackson thing. It's your quarterback. I used to say this about Flacco all the time. When we used to come out and run the ball really well with Flacco, and set up the play action, it settled Flacco in. It was so noticeable. Yeah. That's just quarterbacks in general. The thing about Lamar is you really see him eat early off those RPOs. And I think it's because it forces the ball to come out early. It forces quick decision-making. Rhythm. And it just settles him in because he's good at it. He has good decision-making. We'll get to that later in the offense about the fumble. So save that for later. 99% of the time he has good decision making. But you know, how important is that? Because it seems to be the difference. It's like, yeah, this offense has to work into a groove.
Yeah. And that's it, right? That's why I'm rhythm. It's all about rhythm. And you know, we kind of question, you know, where they start and what the game plan is, how similar is that to where it is, you know, start of the second halves, what does it look like? And honestly, on both sides of the ball tonight, because the defense looked like they had no idea what to expect in this game. And they still didn't, even towards the end of the game there. But yeah, offensively, I mean, Lamar getting into a rhythm is a big difference in this game and plenty of these games this year. And it seems like they just take a real long time to get there, almost like they're trying to do something else and go against the grain a little bit here. And God, the Trestman name popped up this week again. And he was the king of that, right? Overthinking it and trying to plan against what they think that we think that they think. But once Lamar did get a chance to get into that rhythm, once the RPOs were rolling, you could see a difference in this offense immediately. And look what we get out of it, right? Another overtime thrilling victory.
And it brings up another key takeaway that I've had over the first 5 weeks now, and it's happened almost every week. I find that Greg Roman comes into these games with what seems like a poor game plan. And I think you're seeing that in the first 2 to 3 drives where they can't really move the ball. But what he's doing well, and I don't think it's being captured properly, is he is adjusting well. And he starts to kind of shift towards what will work. So we saw it, you know, against Detroit and Denver, they came out to stack the box, force the throw. The difference in the Detroit game was not connecting on those deep passes with the drops. How different is that game with the execution? But the coaching was good. And Greg Roman's not perfect. I mean, I'm not really a Greg Roman apologist. I just criticize what I think is worth being criticized. Things like I thought he was calling the counter bash without setting it up with outside zone. I think that's a perfectly reasonable criticism. I think a lot of the inside zone runs into a stack box aren't working, and yet he keeps calling them. Perfectly reasonable. Saying he doesn't adjust, I don't see that evidence. He's adjusted in every game, and the offense has gotten better. But his game plan coming into the game, criticize him because it hasn't been good. The first few drives don't seem to work. The play calls aren't done well, but he adjusts, so I'll give him that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You can't take that away from him. And I will say, and then obviously we're going to get into the offense a little deeper here, just like a kind of overall general note here, this team for years, it was the pan was make him pass, make Lamar throw. Look what happens when you make him throw. The efficiency today in the passing game with Lamar Jackson, finding his guys, breaking out of just Hollywood and Andrews and finding some of the other guys out there. And Lamar was taking all the throws that were being given to him and not trying to force anything too crazy out there. And look, even losing Sammy Watkins, he just kept on rolling because he's got some rapport build up with some of these other guys out there. And again, we'll get into it a little more when we get into the offensive segment. But man, that was wild. It was absolutely wild. And we both agreed heading into overtime, said you got to go down and score the touchdown, right? That's the only way. You can't kick a field goal here and win this thing. And sure as hell, they win that coin toss, get the ball, march right down the field and put it in.
Absolutely. And, you know, I got to ask, how are you holding up after that insane overtime victory?
So, you know, I will tell you the first thing I did after Holly caught that last ball there was, you know, I've got the pets, the only ones awake in the house with me. So I run over and grab the dog because he's basically as big as I am. And he's my buddy watching games here. So, and we've talked about this before, Cole. We adopted our dog a few years back, got him from a rescue down in the Carolinas. So WTF, What the Flock, we're a pro adoption show. We've talked about it because your dog as well, right?
Yep.
Yeah, there we go. So, but if you're looking to support the calls, look no further than Lee's Great Doggy Bailout at Lee's Pint and Shell. They already had one up at Lee's Landing. They're going to double down and go down to Pint and Shell on Saturday, October 23rd, and that'll be 12 to 4 down there. So, same situation. They partnered up with Key Brewing. They've created the Lee's Great Doggy Bailout beer. That is a little bit of a tongue twister when it's right around midnight. You know, it's a good beer. I'm ready to go back down and get some more. And it's a great cause because 25 cents from each can, or $6 out of each case, is donated to local animal shelters like the Senior Dog Sanctuary of Maryland. And then Pint will also be hosting some pet-friendly and adoption-supportive vendors down there on that day too. So you can come down with your pets, do a little shopping, get a little doggy treat for him, get a little beer for you. So grab your pup, head on over to the Pint from 12 to 4 on the 23rd, and support. Why would I have written in here support for a dog on good calls? That's just... That's excessive fun right there. But
because you're a dad.
That's it. So yep, head on down to Lee's Pine on the 23rd and support the adoption of all pets.
And yeah, we are pro adoption. I shared it on, it was my birthday. So first of all, thank you everyone. I know a lot of my Twitter followers are our viewers. Huge thank you to everyone for the birthday wishes. I just turned 29, but it was funny when we adopted Preston, we get his papers or whatever, because we adopted him from rescue in the same town, and he was going to a vet that was literally around the corner from my house. So I was like, I'll just go there. So I go there to get his paperwork and all that kind of stuff. I look down, and I'm not kidding, October 7th was his birthday. And I was like, no way. So we shared a birthday. So it's kind of a fun little adoption story because, you know, we did the party hat picture and, you know, all that cheesy stuff that we like to do on Instagram.
You have to.
Just embarrasses everyone. But let's get into the offense. Let's get into the fun. So Lamar Jackson, he's the most valuable player candidate. Like, there's no other way to say it. So I'm going to get the bad out of the way with Lamar. The decision to keep on the veer on the 1 yard line, it was terrible. It was so bad that he was switching hands because for those that don't know, on that veer read, the outside edge player is the read player. If he crashes down, Lamar keeps it. And like we saw in those two touchdowns against Kansas City, both edge players crash down, Lamar walks into the end zone. Easy. That's why it's so helpful in those goal line situations. If he stays, you hand it off on the dive. It's that simple. He stayed. It was Julian Blackman. He stayed. That's a handoff. It doesn't really matter what your offensive line is doing. That's not the read. Lamar snaps, puts the ball out, reads his read man, makes a decision. He made the wrong decision. And because Blackman stayed on it and he had the ball in his inside hand, he tried to switch hands. But because he was right there as he tried to run, he got the ball knocked while he was switching hands. That's the breakdown of the play. That's why it happened. What I said earlier, on those veer decisions, on those RPO decisions, it is extremely rare that the wrong decision is made. That's the reality of it. That doesn't take into account the ball security issues we've seen. That's a completely separate thing. In terms of decision making on reads and option concepts, Lamar Jackson is 99%, and that was the 1%. So moving forward, I'm not concerned about that. I think Lamar probably has had that success against KC. Lamar's trying to take the game into his own hands, and he tried to play hero when he should have just handed it off and stuck to his read. It's that simple, folks. Like, there's nothing more to it. As for the ball security issues, this has been happening every year he started. And fumble issues are always going to be a little higher when you're running the ball as much as Lamar does. Lamar doesn't like to slide. He likes to take contact. The dive when he dove for the end zone and the ball came out, I mean, that one was a little more harmless because, I mean, he was diving for the end zone. I think right. He knew he was going to hit the ground. But you'll see defenders go in and try and punch the ball out like we see Marlon Humphrey do. So, you know, what do you think about the ball security issue? Like, what is there to say at this point? We know it's an issue. Like, what do you think?
I'm not stressing it too much there, right? And it seems to come from different places at different times. And you and I have had a discussion about whether ball security includes drops. And I know it's not part of the conversation. Something I still look at in a similar light, but I'm genuinely not worried about it. And look, you know, tonight that will stand out as the glaring mistake by Lamar Jackson. But if you look at every drive following that one play, first of all, that was an 88-yard drive before the fumble, right? So every drive after that play, 75 and a touchdown, 78 and a touchdown, 75 and a touchdown, 68 and a touchdown.
So Lamar Jackson, you are forgiven.
Yeah, and that's kind of it, right? Are you willing to take that off chance that you're going to have a fumble like that on that type of play when that's, you know, the other side of it is four straight touchdowns after that. And I think their final six drives were all like the 70-ish to 80-something yard drives. You're going back to the last drive of the first half. So these things are going to happen occasionally. It was bad timing, right? And it was pretty glaring. It wouldn't have been as glaring had the Colts not returned it the way they did.
For sure.
It is what it is. You know, I still look at that play and I think Lamar bobbled his own, you know, shift of the hands more than the defender. It was Blackman, right? Knocking the ball out. I think it was the shifting of the hands while being wrapped up in the back and you know, going to the ground at the same time and trying to support yourself coming down. So I think it was a self-inflicted wound there. You're right. You know, take the right call on that thing, but it's rare that doesn't happen. And the other thing too, we've talked about is repetition, right? Rhythm and these running backs and this offensive line, this whole offensive unit is still working on gelling right now.
You saw it on that Freeman. They had that bobbled handoff before the final touchdown, right? Like it was kind of a weird one. So it's to your point.
Yeah. And that's it, right? The whole unit is still coming together and gelling. It didn't look like they were gelling much starting early in the game, but you could see it clearly came together. Again, credit back to Roman for his adjustments that he made there. And for the offense, taking the ball and saying, you know, not necessarily saying tongue-in-cheek, saying defense ain't going to stop anybody. It's up to us. And they went down there and they made their statements. And you know what? We'll get to the defense. Credit, they made a few big plays when they needed to. But for the most part, they were a sieve tonight. And against a relatively inept offense. So the offense for the Ravens did what they had to do to keep the team in the game and eventually come in with the victory.
And we have a couple of key stats here. There have been 4,017 individual games of 40-plus pass attempts in the NFL, in NFL history. 4,017 individual games with 40-plus pass attempts. Lamar Jackson at 86% completion is the highest completion percentage in any of those games. So all this crap, make Lamar throw, make him drop back. Well, I'll just go there and bust 86% on you. And Lamar Jackson is the first player in NFL history with 400 passing yards and 85% completion percentage in a game. Those two are obviously tied. He accounted for 499 of 523 yards of offense today. I tweeted earlier, no one wants to make a, you know, this defense can't do anything. There's no answer. Well, there was an answer. Lamar Jackson was the answer to how bad the defense was. This is what I mean. This is most valuable player stuff, plain and simple. It was ridiculous. This was a narrative crusher. Not that that narrative should even be around anymore. I think, like I said, it's just kind of stupid at this point. So, yeah. But you know, I still love seeing it get crushed. I could tweet about it. It's hilarious to me. But you know, how Lamar did it was important too. So 37 completions, 20 of those went to Andrews and Brown. That's high, but I mean, they're wide open. And, you know, Andrews caught 11 of 13 targets. So it's not like he's being forced bad targets. And right. Hollywood caught 9 of 10. So, I mean, what are you going to do? They're not, I mean, they took advantage of a bad, banged up Colts secondary. Sounds familiar. Yeah. And, but, you know, another important thing, Duvernay had 4, Watkins had 2, Freeman had 3, Williams had 2, Prochet had 2, Murray had 2, Oliver had 2. The ball was spread all around. And this is the thing we're seeing with Lamar Jackson this year. It doesn't seem like there's a guy out there that's like the Boykin last year where he's wide open, but Lamar doesn't trust him. There's no, Seth Roberts running around where, you know, he'll throw it up to him, but it's not, you know, it's Seth Roberts. Like, come on.
Yeah.
It's just they have that litany of weapons around them. You know, shout out Seth Roberts. We love you. We're a pro Seth Roberts podcast here. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just the ball's being spread. Lamar, you heard me yelling it when we were on live together. Lamar's started taking the check down. So he's taking the easy stuff. That was the drive in overtime. It was easy check down throws to keep moving the chains. So, Lamar Jackson's showing maturity. Marquise Brown in his post game just said, you know, he continues to do something new and I'm not really that surprised. And it's kind of true. We keep seeing him develop. And that's scary because he is developing as a passer. He was never a bad passer 2019 on, but he's getting even better. And, you know, it's games like this that get you excited. The passing yards are now up there because he was put in a position where they gave you the pass and Lamar went out and got it done. So, you love to see it.
No, and you know, I mean, we could gush for 30 whole minutes about Lamar after that game, but I think something I want to bring to light too is a couple of things. You know, one, Mark Andrews finding pay dirt for the first time in, was it 7 games now? 8 games, if you include the postseason at this point. So Mark Andrews with a crucial score and then a more crucial score and the 2-point conversion. It was a big difference there in that game, seeing him get into the end zone. And we talked Hollywood Brown elevating to a point where if he was standing next to a Hollywood Brown, his feet would have clapped him in the head. You know, it was huge. He got up, he climbed the ladder and pulled this ball down. But you're right. I mean, Lamar was taking these, especially in the late in the fourth and overtime, he was taking these, the check downs, the easy throws, what was given to him. He wasn't thinking too much. He wasn't holding it too long, waiting for the big play to develop. And ultimately he was trusting the guys he was dumping it off to, because we saw Prochet take a couple. Josh Oliver had a couple of those late in the game. Duvernay, Watkins obviously went out early, but those guys, you know, the rest of the receivers really filled in that spot there. So, hopefully everything's okay with Watkins. We'll find out, I'm sure, later today, tomorrow, next couple of days coming here. And could have better timing for Bateman to come back if he does need a little rest. But to see these receivers consistent today and actually kind of jumping back on a point you made earlier about the Detroit game, the drops weren't there today. Big difference without the drops there today.
100%. And the other thing, the pass blocking was good. I mean, I think Lamar got hit. He got sacked twice. He got hit 5 times, but overall pretty good. I mean, that's on 43 pass attempts. I'm sure he had a couple scrambles in there. So they're probably looking at 46, 47 dropbacks, but I would imagine the pressure rate was pretty low. Lamar definitely had to, move and find some time. That's just going to happen. Overall, pass protection was pretty good. On the offensive line, before we get into the defense here, I mean, you can pretty much bunch the run game together because it's just, what's the word? Stagnated is this, mm-hmm. this run game. The Ravens they got 86 yards. They did not take over the record. They will be tied for the 100-yard consecutive games record with the 70s Steelers. It is what it is. I it is what it is. It would have been sweet to have. It would have been dumb. We were talking about they should take a 10-yard penalty and run it into the end zone. No, I mean, the offensive line and pass protection has actually been pretty good. There's been some sore spots. There was a couple of bad blocks by Zietler in the Lions game. Villanueva has had a couple of rough outings. Overall, as a unit, pass protection has been pretty good. Run blocking is not good. They don't seem to have a lot of chemistry. They're running into stack boxes. They're not able to get off blocks. Even in one-on-ones, they aren't pushing guys off the line like you see with Jonathan Taylor. I mean, he's got 4 yards in between the line of scrimmage and the offensive line, and he's just kind of gliding behind them. The offensive line just doesn't get the push. It's just not a good run blocking unit. I don't have a whole lot else to say. It's going to probably be the focus of the film room this week, because it's the biggest issue. And the running backs don't do them any favors. I mean, that's the funny thing about the running backs don't matter argument. A dynamic running back can change things. J.K. Dobbins can make things happen out of nothing. Gus Edwards can, you know, run a duos that gets blown up and hit a cutback, and he's got 10 yards in front of him. Those things matter. And these running backs aren't going to be able to do that for you. But I think when you look at the totality of the problem, yes, the backs are slow. You're not wrong. But there's nowhere for them to run, It seems, ever. So I mean, and this isn't going to get fixed. Like, this is going to be a problem until they step their game up and they execute better, or they continue to pass. Maybe teams will now be like, oh, let's stop stacking the box because Lamar is dunking it on us.
Yeah.
We'll see. But, I mean, the box was stacked heavy, and people will talk about, you know, we've seen stack boxes before and they could run. You're right. They also had Nick Boyle, you know, on the edge. And I don't think people realize how important that is on the veer read when he's the one arc releasing and making those blocks to spring Lamar. Like, Nick Boyle is he's the best probably in the business. Maybe Kittle's better than him at run blocking, especially on those edge block concepts that spring those runs. So that's huge. And so, I mean, Tyree Phillips may get mixed into the situation, but the offensive line is what it is. I don't think he's going to change the game tremendously. They're going to have to gel as a unit, or teams are going to have to adjust, and maybe they'll have less tough sledding all the time.
Yep. We shall see. But, you know, you take this game for what it was, and you move forward. I feel like we're saying that a lot, right?
Yeah.
Just, it is what it is. We move forward, and all you can do really for the entire offense is hope they continue to gel. And look, if this is the effort they're putting out there while they're still learning and getting used to, you know, the guy playing next to them, this can't be a bad thing. And as we see some of these guys come back into the fold, a Tyree Phillips and Nick Boyle or Rashad Bateman, it can only go, you know, up from here. So,
and before we get into the defense, another crazy OT game by the Ravens. How's your stress doing? Must be at an all-time high.
I do want to check my blood pressure, but yeah, it's surely at an all-time high. And, you know, Cole, you know, for me, one of the things I like is a little whiskey, a little bourbon. Helps relieve that stress at the end of the game. Going with water tonight just because I got an early morning, but be a little different. But I will say, you know, look, these games are going to keep coming. We're going to be riding these roller coasters, and I'd like to invite everybody to join me and the folks at Lee's Pint and Shell on Tuesday, October 26th, for their next whiskey event they're holding to relieve some of that Raven stress you may have as well. So it'll be from 7 to 10, again, Tuesday, October 26th, and we'll sip on some Blanton Eagles Rye 10-year and some Buffalo Trace down at Lee's Pint and Shell. So you'll get both featured cocktails. It'll be 3 1-ounce pour flights, along with some featured finger food and a few cool giveaways as well. So make sure you go get your tickets on leespintandshell.com, and let's drink this stress away together.
And we'll drop all that down in the description below if you guys want to check it out. Check out tickets. And the defense, I mean, I'm getting really sick coming here and talking about tackles, but I mean, it's
very weak.
I don't know what else to say. I mean, there's no fix, right? We talked about this the last 2 weeks. There is no fix. I seriously think tackling is a culture thing. I seriously think it matters. I think mindset matters. I think, like, these guys know how to tackle. Come on. You know, when we saw them, I think Harbaugh talked about it. They put them in the pads this week. The guys wanted to hit. They wanted to get more comfortable with the pads. It's not making a difference. I don't think it's literally their technical ability to tackle. I think it's, you know, it seems to be you'll see guys step up. You saw Calais Campbell step up and get the block kick after having a really bad day and run defense. But, you know, it just doesn't seem like they have any defensive leaders that are standing up making the difference. I mean, you can point to Marlon Humphrey. He can hit. He can play physical. You're not wrong. But then there was a play where Queen missed a tackle for a first down and Humphrey had him grabbed by the helmet, you know, in his face. And it looks like he's playing that leadership role. And then on the next play, Marlon Humphrey was the one missing a tackle. And it's right. Just like, it's the, we've seen it in Baltimore. I mean, the defensive leadership is ingrained in this organization. I mean, we had two of the goats of defensive leaders in this organization and Ray Lewis and Ed Reed. And that's not counting Terrell Suggs and Haloti Ngata and all the bad boys that have come through this area. Like it's the marquee place for defensive football. They don't seem to have it. I do think it matters. It's cliche. I get it. You guys are like, well, what's culture? How do you even measure that? It is what it is. Like you see it in our history. You know, we're going to see, I mean, Tavon Young played quite well outside of that penalty. And Odafe Owe played incredible again. Maybe Owe becomes a leader. I don't know. But outside of that, the leaders of the vets on this team just didn't bring it today. And I think that was one of the sole reasons of the struggles on defense.
Yeah. And so when you started talking about leaders and I started thinking like, has there been a recent leader of this defense that isn't necessarily the most skilled player, but that veteran presence that can really get guys up? I can't tell you, right? It's been a while. Do you consider Eric Weddle like that guy years ago for this team? Maybe for a year when he led the league in picks. And I don't know. I loved Weddle when he was here, you know, just for his personality. But I can't think of a guy that's really stepped into that role since Suggs. I mean, that's been it, right? So it's interesting to see, right? The missed tackles, we talked about overcommitting, right? Guys running past, you know, the ball carrier, running past the receiver, overcommitting against Wentz and running 5 yards past him in the pocket on a blitz. So these guys are just totally whiffing. And it feels like Groundhog's Day every week, right? Because we'll talk about this tonight and we'll say they can't tackle. And then the next 2 to 3 days, we'll hear the players wanted to put on the pads and really work on tackling. And then we'll go back out next week and then we'll talk about tackling because it sucks again. So obviously, you know, added practice isn't the difference maker here, right? I don't see anything that we're missing that's changing. You know, there's nothing that I can see tangibly watching this game where I'm like, okay, well, this is the problem. Here's how they would diagnose it. It's not that simple. It's got to be something more. And I think your note on culture probably is a really good justification for what's missing here. You know, Marlon Humphrey, by the way, also gave up that big pass. Was it Pascal, I think, at the end of the game that put –
And he jumped offside on the field goal. And the thing that bugged me, and this isn't going to turn into a Humphrey ripping session. I mean, but it was he jumped offside and then he didn't really fight to get back. And it was just kind of like, I get it. You screwed up. It's probably a penalty either way, but it's just like that. It's just the mindset. It doesn't seem to be clicking there, and it drives me crazy. I think you'll see guys like Jimmy Smith. He's a leader on the sideline. You know, we saw there was that one mic'd up video when he was still hurt, and he's on there calling, you know, walking around with the clipboard. It's not that these guys aren't leaders. It's not that Brandon Williams isn't a leader. It's not that Campbell's not a leader. It's not that Chuck Clark's not a leader. It's that there seems to be a difference in the culture, and it seems to be that kind of, you know, lead by example type of situation. And I should say Chuck Clark played well. Tavon Young played well. It's not that guys don't step up and play well. It's just like that vocal leader that goes out there and does it himself. I mean, listen to any podcast where they interview a former player talking about all-time greats that they played with. And it's, you know, I was just listening to someone talking about Scott Stevens, hockey reference. I was listening to Spit and Chicklets. Out of nowhere. But it was Scott Gomez interviewed on Spit and Chicklets, and he said the reason Scott Stevens was a leader is he wouldn't ask you to do anything he wouldn't do himself. And that is a leadership quality. That's something that if Ray Lewis asked you to do something, it's nothing he wouldn't go do. And that is what made him who he was. And so I'm not saying someone has to come in here and be Ray Lewis. Like, don't get me wrong. That's a lot to ask. It's too much to ask. But it's that's the missing element with this team, and I think it rubs off on tackling. So we'll see if they can improve it. The secondary play, I tweeted this. I wasn't as upset with the secondary play, but that's only because I think I expect less. because of the injuries. The defensive line, however, well, I mean, like, there was no depth to bring in when Averett was struggling. We would have seen him pulled if we had a healthy group. Even if you had Seymour, who only played last week, but he didn't play tonight because he was hurt. He got hurt in practice.
I'm just saying, Chris Westry probably wouldn't have given up all those plays. I'm just going to go ahead and throw that out there.
Yeah. Here we go. Old takes exposed. And
we don't have enough time for that.
And it's just like that matters because guys have rough games. Averett's been locked down through 4 weeks and he struggled tonight. There's no, like, I mean, his numbers are going to be absolutely insane. I don't even want to look at them. But, you know, there was no guy to come in and replace him having a bad game. That type of depth hurts. Lack of depth hurts. The defensive line, however, was abysmal. Williams was useless. Campbell played poor. You know, there's just, you know, even Matabike hasn't really been making the impact you want to see. He seems like a good pass rusher, doesn't get much done in the run game. And like you said to me, like, Taylor just kind of sat behind the offensive line and would have, you know, 4 yards before he even had to make a cut.
Yep. Yeah, you could do whatever you wanted. I said he reminded me of like that vintage Le'Veon Bell where he would just pass through the back of the Steelers offensive line and he had enough time to read the names across the jerseys until he found the hole and he could take off. And that's what they were doing today. And, you know, we looked at the final stat line. Taylor didn't have an exceptional ground day. But he had all the time in the world to diagnose, find the hole, and make the play when he needed to make the play for as many yards as he could possibly make. He was never stunted behind that line until that final play where Campbell and a few guys came through and absolutely blew him up before that field goal attempt. But yeah, I think at Averett, I'll pick one Averett real quick. So the stat they gave during the game was after that touchdown that Averett gave up where Pittman basically just reached right over top his face, grabbed the ball away from him, ran into the end zone to start the second half. At that point in time, Wentz was something to the effect of 8-for-10, 95 yards, and a touchdown against Averett. And they just continued to keep targeting him after, because why wouldn't you at that point in time? And it seemed like a pretty 50-50 proposition after that. Maybe it got a little bit better, a little more comfortable, but he seemed to always be about 3-4 yards off the ball every time. And he was getting spun around. He was skates all day. It was. You're right. It wasn't typical of him. It sure as hell wasn't the all pro type player that, you know, Wink's out there, you know, petitioning for. But it almost felt defensively. And look, there are still issues that we see consistently. It literally felt like a Murphy's Law, what can go wrong will go wrong situation, right? And it seemed like a lot of these guys were just having even worse days than usual or bad days all at the same time today. And against an inferior opponent offensively, you know, I hate to say it that way. Look, the Colts were down, 2-3 offensive starters on the line? And then they were missing a couple other parts and pieces out there. Wentz is still not full go. But, I mean, you're getting burned up by Pascal. You know, you're getting burned up by – and Pittman's a target machine. I do understand that. But this defense should not have struggled as badly as it did. And I know we're only talking 25 points, but – I mean, the Colts left 7 points on the board, right? They had a missed extra point, a blocked field goal, and something else happened out there. But
zone turnover.
There you go. So they left points on the board. I don't think the final score was truly indicative of what the defense was not doing in this game, but I mean, they still gave up 513 yards on the day. So
and what you're saying leads me to, and this is kind of my final takeaway of the game, and it's kind of the whole game, it's you win and lose in the trenches. And the reason the Ravens could have lost that game was inability to run block. I shouldn't say that. It's always number one to me is protect the football. You protect the football, you put your team in a position to win. Second, protect your quarterback. Third, or get to the quarterback. Third, move guys in the run game or stop guys in the run game. You do those three things, you're going to be in a position to win every week. Ravens not being able to do 2 and 3 concern me. And that's my key takeaway. They're not winning in the trenches. It's been a key reason for these tight games. It's been a key reason for where I think they've struggled on offense, where they've struggled on defense. Everything starts in those trenches. Like it proves itself and line play isn't, trust me, I'm a line guy. It's not sexy. I get it. But it's essential. It's so important to this football game.
Huge. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, and we have huge tests coming up. We got the Browns, who I just watched them move bodies against against the Chargers. Like they were just moving people. And
we got the Chargers next.
And we got the Chargers next. And it's their O-line isn't as good, but it's still a good O-line. They made some good additions. And they added Slater. They added Aboucher, who's playing well. I think he's still playing. I'd have to double check that. And then they got the Bengals, and we still got Minnesota. And there's some teams coming in that can run zone, and that's what we're struggling to stop. So, that's what do we need to do better moving forward? Win in the trenches, plain and simple.
Yeah, that's it. And again, I'm going to keep going back to it because I just don't know what the answers are there. Offensively, getting Tyree Phillips back here hopefully in the next week or so will be a difference to that line, especially, Ben Cleveland goes out today. The potential for Tyree to jump in and fill that rotational role out there at guard, I think that can only help the line. And then defensively, I don't know. I don't know. I want to know. I don't know. I still think, by the way, Justin Houston, one miss reaching back on that jersey could have had that sack, and then he would have only been a halfway for next week's game. But I don't know. I feel like there just needs to be more consistency across that entire defensive line. And it starts in the middle right there with Brandon Williams and Calais Campbell. So we'll see. But look, again, we take what we're given here, take that win. It was a great comeback by the offense in this game, taking over. Lamar Jackson had an unbelievable game, career high passing yards, efficient as could be out there, just unbelievable play this week by him. And we'll see what we can get out of next week and against the Chargers.
And we're probably going to be, I hope we're not, but we're probably going to be here sweat dripping down our faces doing this again next week in another barn burner. But, let's hope they come out, they execute, and let's maybe just win by 14 again. Like, can we just do that, please? But that's all we have for you.
Maybe a Tyler Huntley sighting at the end for fun. Yeah, I'll take it.
For the love of God, I missed 2019. That's all we have for you guys today. If you enjoyed today's post game, hit the like button, hit subscribe so you can find your way back for more. We'll be back this week. We got Film Room, we got Fire Zone, we got a lot coming to you here. So check us out, and we'll be back again next week for another post game. Be good to yourselves, be good to each other. Peace out.